The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our award-winning author events series, recorded live at the Parkway Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, our unique and inspiring collections, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org.
Welcome to the Free Library of Philadelphia, and thank you very much for joining us. I am Laura Kovacs, and I'm pleased to be here. Jessamine Stanley is the author of Everybody Yoga and an internationally acclaimed voice in wellness, highly sought after for her insights on 21st century yoga. She is the founder of The Underbelly, an inclusive wellness community and streaming app, co-host of the podcast Dear Jessamine, and co-founder of We Go High, a North Carolina-based cannabis justice initiative. A Refinery 29 review of her new book, Yoke, My Yoga of Self-Acceptance, says it is full of the kind of wisdom, honesty, and vulnerability that can only come from someone who's mastered the art of yoking in all its forms, the physical, the spiritual, the mental. This evening, she'll be joined in conversation with Adrienne Marie Brown, a writer, podcaster, public speaker, and the writer in residence at the Emergent Strategy Ideation Institute. Thank you all so much for being here. Now the screen is all yours.
Hi.
Hi. How are you?
I am thrilled, excited, geeked out, fanning. I'm feeling so many different feelings right now. And I have a set of questions that would take us maybe 5 hours to go through. I'm ready. That's how I am. How are you?
I am blessed. I'm deeply, deeply blessed. And I am very much in the ocean of all that is right now. Mm-hmm. And I am kind of coming to this place where I feel like more so than trying to ride the waves or trying to catch my breath, I just want to be in the ocean. I just want to be letting the life flow through me. And so more often than not lately, I just feel alive. But alive means kind of all over the place. And so I would love if we could just take a moment to just breathe together and just pull into this space. I'm not advocating for anybody to do any one thing. I don't really feel that invested in what other people do, but I do think that something that we can all connect to together is our breath. Mm-hmm. And so if we can just all take a moment, I'm actually going to kick off my shoes so that I can feel the earth beneath me and just close your eyes, relax your shoulders down, relax your arms down. You don't have to do that. You don't need shoulders. You don't need arms. You don't have to put your feet on the ground. You don't need feet. Just find a place that is comfortable for you. And more so than trying to change anything or trying to find the perfect posture, the even breath tone, just try to accept where your body is right now, how your breath is right now. For me, that means letting every piece of myself get really heavy. Eyelids, fingertips, each toe, letting every piece of you arrive here. Arriving here in this moment without regret, without judgment, allowing what is to come to the surface. And it's from this space that you can really start to notice your breath. No judgment. No critique, no change. Just start to notice the way it flows through your body. And that in some places, the breath is tight. In others, the breath is ragged. That's okay. That's allowed to be there. No need to change. No need to do anything. In this space, you can just let yourself be. And then when it's time, you'll know when it's time. You let your eyes blink open. You see that everything is right where you left it. You ready to do this thing?
Yeah, I am. I love you.
I love you. I'm so grateful to be able to talk to you. Like, I cannot tell you the number of people who have said over the years, like, oh, you and Adrian have a lot in common. Oh, you have a lot in common. And I told you that literally my type is the person who has your book by their bedside. Like I was first introduced to you by someone that I love dearly, mm-hmm. very, very much. And I your work has been so inspirational for me. And I feel so grateful to be in community and to be able to connect in general, but especially about something that, like, I'm curious your thoughts about it. Like, I'm like, what comes up for you? What does this bring up? So thank you for being here with me.
I'm really glad you asked me to. I feel like we were like this, you know, just kind of like moving towards each other anyway. And so this is just like, oh, hi, there we are.
Literally, exactly.
There we are. And so much of what my thinking and feeling into life has been really influenced by you, especially lately, the freedom with which you are in motion right now, and the, you know, embodied not being attached, you know, the embodied not being attached to place or concept that people had yesterday of you, or concept you had of yourself yesterday, or any of it. It's just like the acceptance of the present self and the present moment. You're just such a teacher in it. And it's been so important, like more than you know, to get through this past year, to just constantly be like, this is the day. Right now is the day. This is it. This is the moment you have. Here we are in it right now. This is the body that's in the moment, that's in this day, that's right now. This is it. And your gifts are so multitudinous. So the gifts that you're giving, you know, it's like the gifts you embody, but the gifts you're giving us, like, for me, the first thing was like, other people are smoking weed and doing yoga, and you can talk about that.
Yes.
Oh, man. Thank you, boo. Because for years, I've just been like, I can bend over after the joint. Like, I can, you know, like, there's just a different capacity in the body. So thank you for that. Thank you for normalizing the normalcy and the complexity of being fat, Black, and queer in the world's view, right? Because it's one thing to be those things in your own space and to contend with yourself and to contend with the desocialization, but to then be like, okay, world, I'm going to let you look at me. I didn't know so many of you were going to look at me. Fuck.
Not literally.
And God. I feel like you just do it also beautifully. So I just mostly want to like pour out my gratitude. Like, anything else that happens in the phone call is fine, but mostly I just want to say thank you for teaching and giving and offering all of that self-acceptance. You know, when I saw that the book was called Yoke, My Yoga of Self-Acceptance, I was like, okay, this bitch is an expert at this, so we are good. Like, you know, as expert as you can be in this, right? It's an
thank you.
Journey. So, big thank yous. And, you know, I have questions. So I feel like we'll just see what happens, you know, like the questions might go, or the questions might lead us into one place and we stay.
Can I say one thing? This is,
I mean, I mostly want to hear you talk. So you can say, like, I mostly want to hear you talk. So if you just want to say anything you want to say, for however long, like, we're winning.
I have the same goal from, but the other way around. So we'll see how this goes. But I wanted to say that if we're giving thank yous, then I would say thank you to last year. Last year offered me, and I can only imagine all of us, an opportunity to actually acknowledge the present moment. Like, I think that collectively, we're living in this like half step ahead. It's like wanting, it's like the foot is outstretched, and we're like, how can I get forward? How can I look? How can I get forward? And then for those of us with water in our charts, how can I, or with water prominently in our charts, how can I obsess over what has already happened?
Oh yeah.
But it's this like, it's this space of like never really appreciating this moment. And 2020 was like, you shall see this moment. and you will appreciate it. Yes. I don't care if you appreciate it in the form of crying over the fact that you had this moment. It doesn't matter, because that's what we're doing.
That's what we're doing.
And I think the teacher for me, I mean, the teacher is always the present moment, but it is, as much as it was harrowing, I was grateful that it was harrowing. I'm grateful for the fact that, I'm grateful for the fear. Mm-hmm. I'm grateful for the opportunity to reflect. And I think that so much that seems shitty is the gateway to everything that needs to be. Mm-hmm. And I just don't want to go forward without saying, like, I feel like I'm being taught, and that
yes.
I'm learning a lot from our collective experience.
Yeah, I keep being in moments with people that I love and respect, and like kind of have in that place of like, oh, you figured it out, you know, like, you know, and them being with me, someone who's like, oh, I figured it out. People think I know things. They ask me stuff like, you know, since I was young, people just like ask me for directions on the street. Like, I just have that vibe where I'm like, I know something. It doesn't mean I do know something, but the vibe is there. But lately I've been like, oh, everything I thought about myself, like the concepts I had created for myself, I had to outgrow, or I had to shift the relationship to them in this past year. And for me, you know, I've been a futurist. I'm a famous futurist. Like, I'm always shaping the future. And I keep looking at myself and being like, I'm a nowist. Like, can I come out as a nowist? Because I'm like, I think I've been trying to control the future, you know, like, because the past has hurt so much and the present feels so beyond my control. So I'm going to shape the future and control it and like make it better for everybody. And mm-hmm. there's something so humbling. This past year was so humbling. I had such good plans. I had such amazing plans.
I'm so curious about like your number one plan, that like whether it happened or it didn't. Like,
I was going to go. No, it didn't happen. I had booked a spot in South Africa, and and it was a place that was right on this gorgeous huge nature preserve. And I was going to spend 2 weeks there. The whole place was designed with a big window where you're just watching the animals be. And right. That was like, I'd been wanting to do this for years. And that was the end of my sabbatical, was going to be me in South Africa and elephants and zebras. And, yeah. And, you know, and when I realized, I was in Italy when I realized, I'm like, that plan's not going to happen. And you can kick and scream, or you can just be with the fact that that plan's not going to happen and mm-hmm. you'll be okay. But, you know, like you, I think, there was so much that needed to come through inside, you know. It's just like, oh, if I was sitting there, maybe this wouldn't have been able to come through. I needed to sit in discomfort, and I needed to sit in not being in control, so that I could actually learn what I needed to learn to be a better human.
That's it. And there's no other way to learn it. That's what's so life's bitch ass always. There's no other way to learn it than the hard way. Like, I guess the life is kind of like we could do this the easy way, or we could do it the hard way. The easy way is still hard. Like, even whenever it's like it's going well, it's still like, wow, really, like this?
Well, what I noticed, what is so refreshing to me about you is that I'm like, a lot of times what people are doing the easy way is actually the passive aggressive way. It's the repressed way. It's the way of longing all the time for things you never actually get or ask for. It's that way. And what I love about you, and I write about this because one of the things I really want to explore and understand is how you found your writing voice, because your writing voice and your posting voice and your teaching voice, there's this intimacy between the profane and the profound, right? It's just like, it all sits right there. And the number of times where I'd be reading something and be like, move to tears, and then you'd be like, yeah, those chapped lips from dick sucking. And I'm like, yeah, because that's all in there together. You like, you know, and I'm just like, oh, but what you're also speaking to is like, I know that you have hard days. I know that you struggle to understand it all. Like, I see that. You don't hide that. And some people, I think, would say that's the hard way. But it's the only way, right? So maybe that's the first question, right? It's like this question around how you found the language of yoke, how you found the language of yoga that works for you, how you found your voice with which to speak yoga into the world.
Thank you for asking. Thank you. Okay. The first thing that I want to say, I don't even know if it's directly connected to this, but it came up for me when you were saying this, thinking about the profane and the profound. When my grandma was dying, she said so many different things. And one of the things that she said that really struck me was, she was just talking about how, she was talking about a lot of different shit, but she was talking about how she really wanted a glass of scotch. And my grandmother was a Baha'i, which I talk a little bit about being a Baha'i and yoke, but the most important thing that I would note here, which I actually did talk about in yoke, is that Baha'is don't drink alcohol. Yeah. And so I had no context for my grandmother as a drinker at all. And she literally one of the most effective communicators in one of the, she taught me what it is to, she taught me so much, but she taught me what it is to love and to love others and how to be in community with other people. Mm-hmm. And she really, at that moment, was also showing me that like, real life is not all one thing. It's all the things at the same time. And so you can have been your whole life a teetotaling Baha'i and at the exact same moment want a glass of scotch at the end of your life. And that all of these things can be there and that you can say that and that you don't need to cover it up. And I'm saying this because to find my voice in this book in particular, first of all, this book was so much harder to write than my first book. And I think it is because I was connecting with myself in a way that I was practicing in a way that I had not before. And when I never said I wanted to be a yoga teacher. Like I really avoided being a yoga teacher as much as possible. I was like, there are thousands of yoga teachers. Why do I need to be a yoga teacher? And like, even when I went into training, I was like, I mean, I'll go to training, but I don't know that I'm gonna like teach classes or anything. Like, I don't really feel like that's something I need to do. But I really realized in that experience that the whole yoga, the whole thing is just being yourself. It is literally just trying to be yourself. And not as much as you can stepping away from being anyone else. And I think that for this book, that is what was required of me, was to just try to be myself and try to really, more than anything, just try to tell the truth.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you experienced this, but it can be hard to tell the truth. Even when you think you're telling the truth. Uh-huh. Even when you think you're telling the truth.
Yes.
You might not be telling the truth. You might be telling some version of the truth. You might be. I do a lot of speaking in metaphors and analogies and like telling a story on top and using I was saying this earlier today, using very floral language. It's a part of trying to be diplomatic, but it also means being, as you were saying, passive aggressive and being indirect. And I catch myself when I'm creating anything, but especially when I'm writing, in these loops of just trying to get it right or trying to be like trying to find a silver lining or trying to make it feel good or look good. Yeah. And a lot of this process was just, don't do that. Don't do that. Just tell the truth. And even there were times when like I would be telling the truth and it would feel crass to me. I would be like, this is really, I don't know how else to say this, but this is how it's going to be. And I would just, I mean, it felt like every draft was just like, okay, so let's cut out some more bullshit. Where were you bullshitting here? Let's cut that out. And like, I don't even, I think that the reality of my identity, at least, is that I am profane and I am inappropriate and I am I'm inappropriate. I'm not respectable. I'm not palatable. Like, I'm a conflict. I'm sitting at the center of intersections. It's a conflict. And like, just letting that be the case and not trying to be just one thing, like existing in a space of beyond duality, existing in a space of all, where it is just all there. That for me was what it was to find my voice. Because I think that the way that I write and the way that I speak in classes and the way I am on the podcast, like everything is the same to me. Like, I feel like I'm using the same voice. And that is the barometer for me, is like, if one of the voice, if the voice I'm using does not feel like that same voice, then something's up. I'm like, there's some, you're doing something, you're pandering, you want to be respectable, you want to be liked, like whatever it is. And I don't even think I was aware of that before this book. And and so to the point of like how to find it as a teacher, like I think that a lot of times, and this just comes from traditional academia and like the way that we approach teaching as a discipline, I think the teaching is often mistaken for regurgitation, and we get very much caught up in rhetoric and like what it looks like and presenting a facade. And teaching yoga is fundamentally different. And I think that because it is also so limited by being associated with fitness culture and exercise, that there comes this obsession with like getting it right and following by the book and doing these different things. Like, it's really not about either. And I feel like the only way that I could ever, I really have an issue with the idea of being a yoga teacher in general. Like, I think that I'm never really trying to teach anyone. Like, I'm just trying to practice. I'm trying to live my own practice.
Well, it
and that like has become yoga. Exactly. But that feels like if I've ever taught anybody anything, it's because I'm being yoga. Exactly.
This is the thing. This is why I think this is why I love the voice. I mean, throughout the book, my favorite moments over and over were where you were like, okay, I'm exploring capitalism and also I'm fucking in capitalism and also fuck this shit. And then I'm exploring race and white people, but also a lot of people who follow me are white people, but also goddamn it, white people, y'all need to get together. And like, you just go in and through and be like, I'm not outside of this. I haven't figured this thing out. I'm saying, this is what I figured out. You know, this is what I know so far about this thing, but also I'm not of it. And I think so often when people try to teach about or teach others or politicize others, there's a way that you step outside of it to be like, you are a capitalist and you are a white supremacist and you are a racist. And I feel like the way you wrote this was like, I am all up in the things with all of y'all. Here I am, here we are together. And at one point you talk about being an instrument. That all of us are these different instruments. And I was jamming on the ones on that piece. I was loving it because, you know, there's the instrument itself, which is a different instrument. And then there's the conditions about how the instrument will be played, who is holding the instrument, what's happening in that moment. And I was noticing lately, my instrument I've been using for anger for the first time in a long time. Like, I'm good with sadness. I'm good with grief. But I have tended to be a likable person, and likable people don't, so we survive by being likable and being acquiescent and not by being angry. And I've been playing the anger and letting the anger play me and feeling like that moment where you're like, oh, I can't show this. And then it's like, this can't not be shown. It is what the instrument is doing in the conditions, and it's what makes sense, right? It's the only thing that makes sense. And so I was reading this and I kept being like, oh, the authenticity is yoga. Yoga is being yourself and being in the world. It was so, it's such a beautiful thing. Like, it's just like, ah, I get it. And that doesn't mean, as someone who's practicing capitalism, that there's not more to do. It's like you're being with an awareness that there's more to do, right? There's more to grow. There's more to play. There's other songs available. Yeah, I keep being like, I don't even know the question inside of this. It's just like, yeah, that was really amazing that you did that, that you pulled that off. You like, each essay feels like this way that you're saying, here's the thing. Here's the conflict inside the thing. Here's how I'm being inside that conflict. And like, it's all good. Like, we just have to accept that all of that is there. And I really just, I'm like, even to the self-flagellation, which that might've been one of my favorite lines, is don't waste time on self-flagellation, learn from your mistakes and move forward. And you say that when you're talking about cultural appreciation versus appropriation, which I was like, yay. But there's also this way, it's like, once you understand this thing, you don't have to punish yourself for who you were yesterday before you understood it, or who you are now unable to fully shift. So I think this is a question for you that I have, which is like, inside of all that being, what have you learned about being a Black, queer, fat woman teaching yoga, right? Like, what do you feel like you've learned about how to be that in this moment? That's the
oh my goodness. This moment. Mm-hmm. Okay, I definitely should have been taking notes of something that I wanted to say, because I might not get around to all of it. But I think the main thing that I have learned is that I don't have to tell anybody that I'm a Black, fat, queer yoga teacher for it to be true. And I think I think that there are, this is something that I've struggled with so much in my life, about what it means to be Black, what it means to be a Black woman, what it means to be a Black queer person, what does that mean? What does that look like? And now that white supremacy has decided to acknowledge Black identity, that's a stretch, but now that there's more mainstream dialogue about it, there's more, even more of this, like, what does it mean to identify this way? What does it mean to live in this body? And I think that, to me, it's like, it just doesn't even matter what anyone else has been told it means to live in this body. It doesn't matter what anyone else says about it. It is true because it is. And that my identity does not have to fit into someone else's description box. It does not have to be a part of anything related to another human being. And I think that like is not by the book. Like, I don't feel like that is what I was told. But like, that's not how I was socialized. I feel like
it's the opposite, Jessica.
The complete opposite. I mean, to your point earlier, like, I was have always been, I would like to be liked. I would like to be accepted. I would like to I don't want to walk alone. I would like to be one of the pack. And for one reason or another, I now know that it's in my numerology, it's in my astrology, but like, for one reason or another, consistently throughout my life, I have not been able to do that. Like, people don't like me. I am not accepted. This thing is not, and I'm like over and over again, just like trying to like veer back into course, like, no, I'm gonna make it work. And it's like, it just doesn't. So stop trying. And to stop trying to be accepted by other people, and stop trying to let the ideas that other people have about the words that literally define me, just out of, it's like, I am Black, I am fat, I am queer, I am a yoga teacher, like all these, you can just, it doesn't even need to be said words at a certain point, just created, is.
Like distinctions that other people created, yes.
They are irrelevant. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's, I think it is very scary to exist wholly within yourself. I think that the whole self-acceptance as a, as something that we talk about, it really sounds fun. Like, I think it sounds like really pleasant. It's like, oh my God, self-acceptance, love. And I'm like, I don't know. Love is kind of everything. So like, also, I don't want to get too far away from what you were saying about like letting the anger play the instrument, because that is some real shit. And the anger needs to play. Like, it needs to be allowed to play. Yes. But like, I don't know. I'm all over. Let me just step back to what you were originally saying. What have I learned? What I've learned is that who I am is too big to be confined by what anyone else has decided that it is.
That's right. I love that. I love that. And I love, I mean, that shows up in the book over and over again. It's like, you'll take us to a precipice of like, here's what the world has said I will be. Here's how it actually feels to be inside of my life. And that's the lesson. They're different. You cannot see, you cannot see inside my experience. I can only show you so much of it. And that doesn't negate the all connectedness. You know, it really makes me think of the way I think of ecosystem. You know, it's like in the ecosystem, the mushroom cannot know the experience of the squirrel, but they're both having a complete experience and they're in relationship to each other. And they both, their little lives matter, you know?
Everything, everything matters. Everybody matters. This is something that I think perhaps is not really talked about at least that much. Just recently, I was listening to something where someone said like, well, I mean, not everybody is smart. Some people are stupid, something along those lines. And I thought like, really? I was like, really? Are there, not everyone is smart? That's a bold statement. Sounds like it's said by somebody who could stand to do a little bit more
yoga
research and thought about. Well, I'm just like, I mean, what does it mean for some? So it's like, so people are not smart in the way that this person said, but I'm like, that doesn't mean that they don't matter. That doesn't mean that what they're bringing to the world is not important. That doesn't mean that they're not smart. It doesn't, I don't know where I'm going with that. I just think that we live in this hierarchy, we live in a hierarchy all the time about things that are baseless and don't matter beyond our own egos. And I think that's something that I am constantly countering with within myself. It's like, how am I being a supremacist today?
Yes, this is the thing. This is why I think this book is so important for people, is that there's not, you know, in so many places where you're walking, it's like, it would be easy to just judge the people, right? White people doing yoga, and it's just easy to be like, judging. And then it's like, okay, and I'm a Black person doing yoga. I do not also have a lineage to India and this and that and the other thing. It's just like, there's the desire to judge moves us out of the authenticity of being in the experience of being a human being, which requires the non-judgment in order to fully embody ourselves. And I want to read two quotes from the book that I was just like, sweet. Like, So one is page 56. Okay, good. So in 56, you basically just walk us through like, still yourself. You say, sit down and be quiet. You don't need to cross your legs because you don't need legs. You don't need to sit upright because lying on your back is just as legit. Are you comfortable yet? Great. Just try to maintain this posture. Is your mind racing? Are you holding your breath? Are you fidgeting? Are you holding back the urge to speak? Are you worried about yesterday? Are you thinking about what's on your plate for later today? Probably. That's chill. After all, you're human and all of that shit's totally normal. Don't try to freeze time. Just try to be here now. Just try to bear witness to yourself. And that, like, to me, that's the whole book, is that you're then like, maybe you're a white person doing this. Maybe you're inside of capitalism. Maybe you were harmed. Maybe you know your astrology. Maybe you don't. Maybe, right? Maybe you know everything that Swami Satchidananda has said. Maybe not. Maybe it's just like, maybe, maybe, maybe. And all of it is okay, because you just need to bear witness to that. The invitation of self-acceptance is not, it's so different from the self-love movement. That's like, look at that and love it. You know, it's like, that's so hyperactive. And I'm like, that's different. That takes a lot of work. But if you can just be with it, like, that is.
You know, when you were reading that, I was thinking about how the person that I know of who said, be here now, in a way that I really heard it, is somebody that I would have been very critical of. It is a white man that I was very critical of, Ram Dass. I want to say his first book is called Be Here Now.
Yeah.
And I had always been very critical of Ram Dass for a variety of reasons. And toward the end of his life, those who work with him created a documentary about his life, where it was a lot about how the inner stillness that was offered to him through his, I don't know if he had more than one stroke, but I know that toward the end of his life, he came to a state in which he was looking within.
Yeah,
the vast majority of the time. Yeah. And he said that that was like the greatest gift of his life, and that that he had learned so much through that experience. And I just feel like he offered me so much through that. And even I still stand by the critique. I still think that all of us being critical of one another is so crucial, and I think that but it doesn't negate the impact. And this is something that I was thinking about before when we were talking about white people practicing yoga, because this is something that when I first pitched this book, that was really my thesis statement, was that I am so tired of so many things that I have seen people do, well, specifically seen white people do in the yoga world. And I'm ready. Like, I got my keyboard ready, keys clacking. And then I was like, oh, I'm a part of this too. I don't have anything to say to anybody else. I ain't got shit to say to anybody else. I need to figure this out within myself. I need to accept this within myself. And so thinking about like how I think there is such a desire to be right and to have the right answer and to do good. And the reality is that we're all doing bad. Everybody's doing something that's hurting somebody. And I think that I said cultural appropriation is more American than apple pie, because I think that appropriation is actually like one of the side effects of bringing people together in this way. I think that it's a part of this great experiment that we're all doing together. And it's something that the not talking about it is the problem. The lack of awareness around it, if there's any problem, that's the problem. But it's like, if we don't know how to love ourselves,
yes,
if we don't know how to accept ourselves, how the fuck are we going to accept anybody else? So why would we not be stealing from one another and not having direct communication and like finding an infinite number of ways to be harmful toward one another?
Right.
Because we are not at a base level accepting ourselves. And I just think that doesn't have anything to do with pointing a finger at anybody else. It's just about accepting yourself. And I walked very far away from the point.
Well, no, but it's all the point. I mean, it's all the thing. It's like, I think that this piece where often when we are, you know, drawn to the keyboard or I want to write the critique about the thing, we're really trying to push away from ourselves something that we are right up in and on, right? I notice this all the time where people are like, you know, just yelling about something. And I'm like, oh, you do that. Like you literally do that. You are doing that. That's your thing. You know, I tease
you
people
love
about
it.
This all the time. But I'm like the folks who, you know, and I say this as a mixed race Black woman, you know, mm-hmm. to someone who I know is in relationship multiracially. But I'm like, a lot of times the people are like, Black, fuck these white people. I'm like, they're the people who are the most intimate relationship with white people, right? And I'm like, saying that to your white folks, not your white folks, but you know what I'm saying? The white folks in your life, like,
literally.
I just have this moment where I'm like, when it's bothering you that much, there's something in you that needs the wisdom of the awareness. And there's something you say on page 62, the mm-hmm. subtle spiritual body, which I just love that language. You say it multiple times. Mm-hmm. The subtle spiritual body guides all yoga practice. The physical body grows frail with time, but the subtle body grows more virile and wise with every passing day. And so I cried when I read that because my physical body has been getting so frail, and yet I do feel this expansive self happening. And I wanted to bring it into specifically the act of publishing a book, right? Because your wisdom is constantly growing. And when you put together this physical book, which immediately is becoming less relevant, is immediately deteriorating, immediately like
literally,
now it's in the past. And I always feel this little aftershocks of wisdom, you know, stuff that comes out. I'm like, did the book go to print? Oh, now I know. Right. Now I know the thing that now I know. So I wanted to ask you if you've had any aftershocks of wisdom, wisdom, like since publishing Yoke. And I'm being selfish. I keep, so please ask questions. If y'all have questions, I will try to fit them in. This question I wanted to ask you before I ask you. Mm-hmm. Aftershocks.
Oy, endless aftershocks. I mean, talk about the book becoming irrelevant. Okay, well, okay.
it becomes more and more relevant, you know, like right now, this book is incredibly relevant to me, even if it might already be for you in the past and you're beyond it.
It became irrelevant for me as soon as it was finished.
Exactly.
It became like, it literally was like, oh my God, thank fuck, I can move on from this mentally. Like I spent 4 years like thinking about these things. Like I can at least say, yes, I have closed it up, but you never close it up because there's endless knowledge coming. And I think the lessons that I have been offered through publishing this book, I would have gladly not learned. I'm so good on them, but they are coming regardless. Like, okay, you want to talk about being passive aggressive? I have so much, or I have historically had so much shame around my writing and not believing that I'm a writer and not wanting to call myself that and feeling like I have to hide this work and that it's something that that I'm scared to show other people, so that I was very careful to not use anybody's name that was not my parents and I used their names, but and my aunt. But other than that, like I didn't use anybody's some other people. But
person was with me. They're my friend. That was my yeah,
exactly, literally, exactly.
I was like, okay.
So, one of the people that I did not explicitly talk about is my partner, and we have been together for, it's in the book. We've been together for about 10 years, and this person is obviously extremely important to me. Yes. But we got together when we were very young, and our communication, I think, in a lot of ways mirrors that the youth that we were in when we first got together. And I did not know how to talk to them about talking about them in this book. Yeah. And not until it was being published. And by that point, it's like, okay, we're really far down the line. And like, I don't need for you to approve this. And like, we even had this whole conversation where they're like, I appreciate them being a Gemini in this particular way, because they're like, I mean, I'm not going to get in the way of your creative vision. Like, if you have, you're going to need to get it out regardless. So like, I'm not getting in the way of that. But their reaction to the intimacy trust being broken between us was something that I mean, it was a level, like, you can talk about cancers being passive aggressive until some shit like this happens. And then it's like, okay, now is the time to reckon with this. Like, you can't go forth like this. And so that, as a lesson, has been huge for me, and something that I find myself still reflecting on, and that I feel like if I could add on to the book, it would be about this. And and I think that the ways, I'm so grateful for the fact that it's like, it's when it's over, when there's no more, you cannot, it's, I'm glad that my publisher can say
the world is, it's like, it's out.
Literally, just let it go. It's fine. And like, I appreciate that, because I would never publish anything. I would be out here like with things that are just hanging out in manuscript form for decades. I mean, there's constantly things that expected. Maybe never see the light of day.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. I love that. I love the vulnerability of that sharing. And I send like vibes to Bay, because that stuff is really hard to navigate. That stuff is really tender and intimate. It's so intimate, you know?
It is.
So yeah. We have a question, and there's one that was about authenticity and bearing witness, which I think we've touched into. But this question here is someone who recently finished yoga teacher training and related to you sharing that even upon starting the training, I didn't see myself teaching yoga. Yoga for me is all about relationship. All my work is about relationship. And I certainly wanted to add yoga principles as a tool in my relationship building toolkit, so to speak. Can you talk about holding yoga as a compass, a sort of compass or candle in the heart that facilitates all the other parts of being?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is a really helpful principle to hold. And I think that there's so much about this shit that I did not understand when I first started practicing, that I did not understand when I first started teaching, that I think even now it's just being revealed over and over again, but it's literally just the same things over and over again. And I think the basic compass, like the due north, is just accept it. Just accept it. It doesn't matter. Just accept it. Whatever it is, that it doesn't matter. Just accept it. Don't try to fix it. Don't try to change it. Just accept it. Don't try to fix it. And the thing is, like, I don't ignore it. Don't pretend it's not there. Just accept it. Mm-hmm. And I think that even just accepting, I think this thing happens where you'll be like, okay, yeah, I've accepted it. What next? What do I do now that I've already accepted it? How can I do next? There is no next. There's nothing more. It is just continue to accept it. And that every day there is an opportunity to try to accept something else. Like accepting even just with the teaching in and of itself, accepting not knowing what you're doing, accepting the questioning of what is being, of the wisdom that you have been offered, accepting that you don't have the right answer, accepting that you did the wrong thing. Like, this is probably the biggest thing, because I don't know about anybody else, but I have a lot of difficulty really owning up to the shit that I could have done differently or would do differently.
Yes.
I would much rather just pretend that it didn't happen or be like, oh, it's cool. You know, I got another next day forward. it's okay. And it's like, no, you gotta accept it. Cause it just, the only reason really being that you're just gonna, it's just gonna show up again in another way. Like, I'm so curious, Adrian, if you're having this experience, but like, I feel like the things that come up, the issues that come up in my life at this age are the exact same issues that I was having when I was a kid. Like, it's just a different form.
Absolutely.
And with it's just over and over again.
Support system, you know, so I'm just like, oh, yes. Like, damn, that fucked up thing is still there in me and it still hurts. But now I have a therapist and I have like a team and I can talk about my boo and I got my best friend. But I'm like, also that acceptance piece is so interesting because I feel like people are always like, accept it and put it behind you. You've healed. And I'm like, no, accept that this is your life's work is a different thing, right? And so it's like accepting that your life's work is, you know, there's both the individual life's work and the systemic life's work, you know? So I'm like, there's a piece of life's work. And I love that you talk about in the book, being slim fat, moving into fat, moving into, you know, noticing the parts of you that are still hating fat, noticing the parts of you that absolutely love your body and all of that. I'm like, being given a body that is fat means there's a life's work to being in relationship with it and in relationship with others from it, right? It's like, you don't just, and people are like, oh, but I saw you in a swimsuit on the thing. I saw you in your Ivy Park today. You know, I see you doing this. It means you must have put it behind you. And it's like, no, it's still my life's work.
Literally.
Right?
It is still, I think that is, everybody wants a quick fix. I think there is no quick fix. I think it is all the point because there's no, I think that often life is treated as like a game that you're supposed to get a good score on. And then you're supposed to get like, I don't know if you enjoy the game of life. I personally love the game of life, but at the end of the game of life, you go to like the mansion land or whatever. And it's like, I feel like that's what everybody's aiming for. It's like, yeah, I want to get to mansion land.
Heaven, like whatever it is.
Yeah. Right, but it's like, I think it's, I think that the goal is to get there in this lifetime and to be like, yes, I have figured it out. And I don't have to worry, pain, thing of the past. I no longer feel any problems. And I'm like, the pain is the point. The problem is the point. The whole, everything that you don't like is the point. Like if you were, cause sometimes people will be like, you know, like I used to have body issues, but now I don't anymore. That feels like a sign that you still have body issues. Like it's still just, it's right there. Like,
you
it's
might have fine. Shifted them or something. You know, you might be in a different relationship. Like,
yeah, I think that like being able to just say, like, it's just, it's a journey. The concept of the final destination is what gets us so upset. Yes. Because just accepting that it is a journey, it is always unfolding. It's always going to be some version of the same bullshit. And you can even feel, at this stage, I'm really trying to get comfortable with the complaining that I want to do about it. Like, I can accept, but I will also be complaining the whole time. Like, I don't want to do it. I don't like it. I'm mad about it. That's okay. Like, you can complain about it. Don't.
Yes.
No, there's nothing wrong with being complicated.
To be able to say, like, you know, I think I mentioned this, but, you know, I just came through this move and like everything that could have gone wrong during the move went wrong during the move because it was an impossible move during an impossible time. And I thought that because I'm a Virgo, I was still going to make it not hard, but it was hard. And it was just like, at a certain point, I'd just be like, fuck, this is not fucking great. This fucking sucks, whatever. Like, and my list and my spreadsheet don't help because it was destination. I was like, we're just going to be there. It's going to be great. And it's like, no, we have to get there. And along the way, we're going to get sick and we're going to run into a ceiling fan and the turtle's going to shit and there was going to be no water, but we're still going to get there. And being in it, you know, I already had your book at that point. So I was already like, and I was like, this is all the yoga, right? It's like, how do I be in this moment? And there's not a right way to be, but can I notice, can I observe, can I be a witness, and can I be in it, and then can I live it? This is all the yoga.
And I feel like you can still say, you can be looking at the book like this is all yoga, and fuck that. Like, fuck the book. And I don't want it to be yoga. It's still going to be yoga. No matter.
No, it's like, this is the scorpion pose or whatever. I'm like, this is the hard yoga, but this is still the yoga. So I worship this book. I worship at the altar of self-acceptance and the offering that that is. I do think that people reading this book, giving themselves space to feel this book, and feel what you're offering, will transform their lives, will transform their potential for their lives, right? Just like you're gifting people back the rest of their lives to be present in and to be authentic in. And I think that's such a gift. And I would like to offer you a gift. Can I gift you a tarot deck?
Are you joking? You gift me a tarot deck?
Can I gift you a tarot deck?
Please. Oh my, please. Cannot even tell you. Please.
I was so to see the astrology and tarot and just the idea that you're like in these other practices too, which I think are ways that we listen to the universe, you know? So, okay.
Can I
send you a gift of tarot decks? That'll be on the way. And I know we're at 8:31, so I know we're at time, but I feel like you have one more thing.
I just wanted to ask you what cards have been showing up for you recently, if you're seeing anything. Because this what I cannot with readings is when I'm like, okay, yeah, thanks. Like,
I've been getting all sixes. I've been getting a lot of sixes, which is basically like,
very interesting. After
you hit rock bottom, fives are the rock bottom. It's like the hardest. It's like you just like, I'm never gonna have it. And then I've been getting sixes, which is like,
fuck yeah.
You're not tens, you're not nines, you know, you don't have it all, you're not landed, you're definitely not in the royalty, but you are past the worst of it. And now you're
exactly
be in this, you know, this is time to start to rebuild, to feel nostalgia, to notice your successes, but it's small step. Six, I think of six as the small step cards. So what about you?
It's like, did you feel that? You got that? man, I don't want to tell you. Okay.
You know what?
We can talk about it later. That was, this is me being, okay. I just have been red for blood recently. And I mean, like, it's shit like the Tower reversed. I got fucking, the other day it was a bunch of things related to, I don't usually get that many things related to pentacles all in the same spread. But it was a lot of talk about money and a lot about just the way and energy flow. And wisdom is just always so, it's just very, very helpful. Anyway,
you're getting both tarot and pentacles, because pentacles is both money, but also the material, your material world. Right.
Literally.
So if you have tower and your material world is changing, you know, just that's all that it's like your material
crumbling.
World is crumbling and
full crumble.
You're going to be in fool mode again. Mm-hmm. Right. Which is my favorite cards are the Fool and the Hermit.
Okay. The Fool is that's why the first chapter, the prologue of this book is called The Fool. And it is because that is who I identify with so fully. But the Hermit is the Fool. It's the exact same person.
Hermit is the Fool after one dance. It's like, hold up.
I feel like the Fool has to get nipped up a couple times before really being like, okay, Herb, this is nice. The lesson. But I am when I was a kid, my mom is really into astrology, and she's particularly into numerology, and she would always read our birthdays all the time. And the Hermit was the card that was associated with my birthday, and I just like always thought about that, but also like never really gave a fuck that much. And now I'm like, oh, that's what this path is. It's the Hermit. Anyway, we can talk about this more later. I know
we're time. You will. I really, really all the things bow down. I'm so grateful that you exist and that you write and that you think and that you're a being. It's good for the world. You being is good for the world.
You being is good for the world. Thank you so much. Thank you. The wisdom, the light that you offer others is beyond what I'm minimizing it even by trying to say it. Thank you.
I know thank what you mean. Being you, and there's thank no you way to here. Say it. It's just, it's fantastic. So thank you, Philadelphia Free Library, and librarians around the world, because y'all are such badass organizers, making everybody better. And thank you, everyone who joined us tonight. We love y'all.
Love you, love you, love you. Thank you so much, y'all. Have a good night.
It's over.
Peace. Later. Have a good night, y'all.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Free Library of Great Conversations. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information on the series is available at freelibrary.org/authorevents.